it has been quite endemic in terms of our chopping and changing between science plans and strategies coming and going, and you know, businesses often not quite being able to plan properly. I think for the most part, Labour and the Conservatives are fairly aligned in terms of the macro aspect of it, which is, you know, going for growth. There's lots of things that ministers do on a day-to-day basis. There's lots of times where you can get yourself into hot water.
From the first-time founders to the funds that back them, innovation needs different. Our episode partner, HSBC Innovation Banking, is proud to accelerate growth for tech and life science businesses, creating meaningful connections and opening up a world of opportunity for entrepreneurs and investors alike. Discover more at www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. Hello and welcome to the UKTN podcast, a weekly chat with the movers and shapers of the UK tech industry and the destination for all things UK tech related. I'm your host, Jane Wakefield, and this week I am joined by Alan Nixon, the head of science and technology at think tank Onward. Welcome, Alan.
Great to be on. Thank you for having me.
Now, first of all, just briefly explain what Onward does and your role within it.
Yeah, so Onward is a Westminster-based think tank. We exist to try and influence government policy. I am the head of the science and tech team, so I focus on all things related to science and technology policy. And I've been there for about a year now. Before that, I was an advisor in government and various different roles across Number 10, Health Department, and Home Office, doing security and technology policy when I was in there. And I spend most of my time focusing on how the government can improve its science and technology policy so that it can become a science superpower as it sets out to achieve.
And we'll be talking a bit more about that in a minute. But first of all, I want to talk about the budget. I'm talking to you at the end of budget week. I think it's probably fair to say that there wasn't a lot in this spring budget for businesses. It was very much aimed at the electorate and an election year, as you would probably imagine. Yeah. But there were a few things. I guess the things that stood out for me was a bit more funding for the Alan Turing Institute. Obviously, AI is on the top of the government's agenda. Money for NHS digitisation. And also, as we're speaking, it's International Women's Day. And I was at an International Women's Day event earlier today. And many of those people were very pleased to see that the government has reversed its decision for income thresholds for angel investors, which were going to go up to £170,000, and are now back down to £100,000. So those were the sort of three takeaways for me. What about you? What did you see within the budget that you think is interesting for the tech industry and for businesses?
Yeah. I mean, they are a couple of important ones, definitely. I'll be honest, I'm not blown away by the extra £50 million for the Alan Turing Institute. I've not seen too much detail. I've seen bits and pieces. There's as to where that's meant to be going on health, I think clean energy and defence. There's not really been much more focus on that. And, well, you know, the Alan Turing Institute has the promise of being a real gem in the crown of the UK AI, but so far, I'm not sure if it's quite achieved that yet. So hopefully this doubling of funding to 100 million over the next 5 years will help it on that. But I've not seen enough detail to really know what that's going on. So I'd like to see that. But that was at least, you know, positive that we've seen extra investment going into that.
It's not a lot of money either, is it? I mean, you know, that's a bit of probably a drop in the ocean, isn't it? Especially when we consider how much the big tech companies are spending on AI. Do you think government should be investing far more in this burgeoning and potentially societal changing technology?
Yeah, well, I mean, Alan Turing Institute is one part of this sort of overall AI project that the government is trying to push forward. And it is a doubling of funding. So it's not too small in that sense. I think when you talk about the amount of money that big tech companies are putting, and a lot of that is going into things like compute. There wasn't anything really in compute in this budget. There was the promise that the government will come forward with its plan for how it is going to help access to things like AI researchers and startups to its burgeoning compute infrastructure, which is important because whilst the government has made a lot of progress, at least on paper, in terms of its funding commitments towards compute, which is really important to things like AI startups, there's not been too much detail in terms of how that access is actually going to work. And that's really important for AI researchers and others to be able to actually access this really important compute. So when that comes, that'll be really important. But that was really the only thing that related to compute infrastructure and access from the budget. Last budget was actually much more significant, really. That were the autumn statement last year had about £500 million extra funding on top of £900 million that the government had already committed. And that's going to be going towards compute infrastructure in Cambridge, Bristol, and there's a supercomputer up in Edinburgh. That's all really welcome. Part of the challenge with that is that that is going to take a little bit of time. So even once the government's set up its plan for how people are going to access it, actually when it's going to be online is still TBC. So that's, there's a lot more to do there in order to improve our AI strengths in the UK.
And anything else from the budget that you were impressed with or things you would have liked to have seen that we didn't have?
Yeah, so one thing that was good, it was rather small, a little bit niche, but important, which was building off of the Chancellor's Mansion House reforms announcement, which were in around about July last year, which is related to reforming pension funds. This when I start to talk to my colleagues, even in my think tank, which, you know, is filled with policy nerds like myself, even their eyes start to glaze over when I talk about pension funds. But it's actually super important how we can encourage pension funds to release more of their our investments into unlisted assets, such as technology, venture capital in general, and private equity. It's really, really important. The UK has a big pensions market, second or third biggest in the world, depending on how you measure it. But our venture capital does not benefit from pension funds in the way that other places do. We have about, I think it's 10% of UK venture capital is funded by pension funds, whereas in the US, 72% of their venture capital is powered by pension funds, and they obviously have much more firepower. So even in terms of not total amount of money, but even percentage-wise, we're way behind others who do it far better, and we have the pension funds there. So there's lots to be done, and I won't go into the detail of all the intricate reasons why pension funds don't invest enough into venture capital, but I would just give a quick plug to our report that we did last year, Pension Power, which goes into a little bit more detail on this. But basically, what happened in the most recent part within the budget this week was there's a change to how pension funds are going to have to report their returns. Without going into too much detail on this, basically, it's going to force them to look at how much money they're actually getting back for policyholders, as in you and I who have pension policies ourselves, and it's going to show how much they're actually getting back. Because part of the problem is that these pension funds are too focused on upfront costs, as in when they put their money in X place versus another. Too often they're worried about the upfront cost of that rather than how much they can actually get back. And venture capital is shown to be very good at getting good returns, sort of, you know, across the board at the macro level, but actually has higher upfront costs. So trying to get pension funds to focus more on long-term returns rather than upfront costs is really important. So it's one tiny tweak, but actually could be really important in this. One thing I would have loved to have seen that wasn't there was Treasury and DSIT have been working on, and they've said this publicly, they've been working on reviewing how DSIT, the science department, spends, how they can spend. And again, I will refrain from going into too much government detail and wonkery, but basically the business case process, which is basically how Treasury sign off on spending plans from other departments, is incredibly bureaucratic and long, and the science department needs to be, given how fast the tech world is moving right now, needs to be far quicker in this. A big blocker to that is this business case process. I know that they are working on a review as to how they can improve this. And this has actually stemmed in large part to a report that we did over the summer called Wired for Success. So they are looking at how they can improve that. I was hoping that we might be able to get some more detail into how they can actually improve this. We've got some recommendations on that front, but they have not responded to that yet. And I'm hoping to see that soon.
And we'll talk a little bit about that report that you just mentioned, Wired for Success. And I suppose, you know, one of the key things there is that you've talked about being a big fan of this new department that's been set up, the Department of Science, Innovation and Technology. And right now, the Secretary of State for that department is in a little bit of hot water. Michelle Donnellan made some comments about an academic and links to Hamas, which she had to retract and then had to pay out legal fees. People are questioning whether she should have made the comments in the first place and also whether the government should have been the ones that footed her legal bill. Some people even calling for her to resign. What are your thoughts on that situation? Again, it's a quick moving situation, but as we're talking at the end of budget week, she is still in place as the Secretary of State. But what are your thoughts on that whole situation?
Not many. I've not really paid too much attention to it. I don't think it's that big a story. I don't see really, unless, you know, more things come to light or whatever, I don't see it really running much further. And I've not really, like I said, I've not really paid too much attention to it. So I've probably not got too much more to say on that, I'm afraid.
I was thinking mostly, I guess, in terms of, you know, whether the department should be getting involved in these kind of issues, because obviously, you know, there's a lot to do just in the tech community without sort of pushing their remit further. Do you think they should just concentrate on the issues that are affecting the tech industry right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. So, you know, there's lots of things that government ministers do on a day-to-day basis. There's lots of times where you can get yourself into hot water, given that the amount of things that are going on, the amount of public-facing things that you do. So, you know, this is one thing that I'm sure they're perhaps not, you know, too delighted with with it being a story, but there's so much else left to do. I'm sure they're just cracking on with the day job. At least I hope so.
And when we talk about that day job, what are the things that you think that they need to focus on? You've talked about four C's in your report. Do you want to talk me through those, first of all?
Yeah. So the background to this was basically in summer of last year, we decided that we would do essentially like Mark DSIT's homework, you know, a bit of a report card, which is quite a fun exercise. And we sort of sat back and said, right, so the government has decided to basically set itself up better structurally for science and technology. Fundamentally a good thing to do. There's lots of challenges with how it was set up before, not least with the fact you had lots of tech policy like AI and sort of digital infrastructure in DCMS, which culture department, which did, you know, media and sport and all sorts of different things. And then you had a lot of the R&D and the sciencey stuff in what was at the time BEIS, which is, you know, the business department. And that was just one of a number of challenges that government faced in terms of a bit of a dislocation between these different important things, when clearly there's a lot of synergies between the science and tech side. So yeah, so that was what they did. They created, obviously, the science department back in February of last year. And then we decided, right, if we're taking the view that that is an important first step, but only a first step, what more does government need to do in order to really set itself up for the long term to seize this science superpower agenda that it likes to call it? We then said, right, so first of all, government would have to show and really put science and technology central. And that's the first C. And that's, is it at the heart of government? Is number 10 really focused on it? The Prime Minister really focused on it? And really, is there, you know, sort of people there driving it from the centre of government across Whitehall? Because lots of these things, when it's perhaps just in one department, underpowered, you know, minister or whatever, it might not actually translate across the whole of Whitehall. So it is a really sort of political oomph behind science and tech. That was the first one. Second one was choices. Basically, if you have a strategy on science and tech, you need to actually be able to make choices. And we said, is the government actually showing that it is willing and able to choose where it wants to back, rather than, you know, sprinkling across the board and being a jack of all trades, master of none sort of outcome. The third one was coordination, which is government actually being coordinated across not just Whitehall, which is hard enough between the different departments, but also with its sort of subsidiary bodies like UKRI and the research councils there, because there are challenges there, and also with the regulators, which is a challenge too, because often, well, they're independent, and how government and regulators can sort of act as essentially one overall in terms of being the state, trying to make sure that they're better coordinated is really important, because when you're a business, you don't care whether it's a science department or regulator, it's the state that you have to grapple with. Is that actually coordinated and set up in order to support, you know, our sort of world leading tech businesses that we've got? The last one is just consistency, which is government actually now going to not chop and change in its plans, and it's have longer term consistency so that businesses can plan better, because that has been endemic and to to an extent, it is sort of an inevitable outcome of the democratic system, but it has been quite endemic in terms of our chopping and changing between science plans and strategies coming and going, and, you know, businesses often not quite being able to plan properly accordingly. So that was the fourth C that we said was important.
HSBC Innovation Banking, our partner for this episode, provides commercial banking services, expertise, and insights to the technology, life science and healthcare, private equity, and venture capital industries. To find out why innovation needs different, go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb. And on that consistency one, obviously we are in an election year. It could be a Labour government in power. Do you think that they are going to keep going on the same plane that this government has set in motion, or will they change direction completely?
So it's hard to tell. I think the first thing to note is that there was a moment in back in the summer when we were writing this Wired for Success report when it wasn't too clear whether Keir Starmer, if he were to become Prime Minister, would keep the science department. And there was a little bit of news in the press suggesting that he might scrap it. And we were thinking, right, we need to, it makes it even more important for our paper to come out and make the case for it, because it is fundamentally a good thing to do to have a science and tech department with a dedicated science and tech Secretary of State. But since then, and I'm not saying this is a causation, but perhaps as correlation, but since then, he has made it quite clear that he at least currently looks like he will keep it, because he is, when he reshuffled his shadow cabinet, he reflected the science and tech role by bringing in Peter Kyle, who is now the shadow science and tech secretary. And so that suggests that there's, you know, more support for at least the science department. I think for the most part, Labour and the Conservatives are fairly aligned in terms of the macro aspect of it, which is, you know, going for growth, to coin a phrase, and they're pretty aligned on that. And there's quite a lot of focus on what you can do to improve investment and, I guess, improve the consistency of long-term decisions. And this sort of is one good thing that I think was that the Labour Party definitely deserves some credit for, which is in Peter Kyle's speech to Labour Party conference, he called for a 10-year R&D settlement. Normally, government is across a 5-year spending review settlement period, and he called for that to be 10-year, just to give extra stability and consistency to the science sector, which is a positive thing.
The report also had some suggestions for things that that government should consider. One of these was setting up a technology and future intelligence unit. So tell me a little bit more about what you see that doing. We've heard about lots of different plans, from having a scale-up forum, obviously we've got kind of things specifically set up to look at AI. Are we in danger of having too many talking shops? What would this technology and futures intelligence unit add to the conversation, as it were?
So, I mean, it wouldn't really add to the conversation. Our vision wasn't that it would be a public-facing body. It would be an internal thing within government. But what it would do, and there are sort of, as we allude to, there are a few bits of this already taking place within what's known as the Government Office for Science, for instance. But essentially, the idea is that there is so much development happening, not just in academia, which is sort of essentially where it's the cutting edge science and tech developments happened before. Much more of it now is happening in corporate labs. It's also happening in government labs abroad. And there's a lot of, given the importance of science and technology to even like our national security, you know, the security services, intelligence services. This was referenced in the integrated review in the 2023, I believe, where there's more focus going on to understanding through intelligence and security services, understanding what is happening abroad within other countries related to cutting edge science and technology development. So both commercially and kind of international intelligence, you need to be able to understand what is happening across the landscape, both for our sort of domestic capabilities, but also long-term security. You need to be really, really good at spotting the changes that are happening. I mean, you know, people refer to ChatGPT exploding onto the scene. And to some extent, the UK was slightly caught unawares by that. I mentioned the Alan Turing Institute previously. I don't believe that they had actually focused too much on large language models up till that point, which I know that others criticized them for, because that's obviously now a massive area of focus, and there's lots of companies putting billions into large language models. This is something that we were slightly caught unawares on, therefore having stronger, and I'm not putting that entirely at the feet of the Alan Turing Institute, but as an example, we need to sort of make sure that we're not caught unawares and we're at the forefront of all the amazing cutting edge science and tech developments that are happening both in the UK and abroad.
And another idea is that we should have designated research labs as national infrastructure projects. What's the plan there? What was the idea there?
When it comes to very large projects, there is an insane amount of bureaucracy that they have to work through. Understandably, I mean, these are when NSIP, it's the NSIP regime, which is Nationally Significant Infrastructure Projects, is what the acronym stands for. That applies to all sorts of things from, you know, a new runway in Heathrow to, you know, an advanced battery manufacturing site up north or wherever. So big, big projects. But the problem is that actually science infrastructure doesn't automatically fall into this NSIP regime. Then what the NSIP regime does is cut away a lot of the bureaucracy. I won't go into too much detail as to what that entails, but essentially some of these projects can take, you know, from early period to actual, even getting it off the ground, to getting diggers in the ground, can take years and years and years because it's caught up in endless amounts of bureaucratic red tape. The NSIP regime is not perfect by any means. The government's been pretty open about that, but it's shown that it's been able to cut things down for what was on average about 8 years down to 4 years. And actually it did even manage to get it down to about 2 years at one point, but that has sadly gone back up to four. The government has been clear that it's trying to cut that back down so that big, important projects like your big science infrastructure things, the likes of the Harwell campus, you know, you have huge projects happening up there, up in Oxfordshire. We need to be able to make sure that they can happen actually quite quickly. Otherwise, one, they will just happen incredibly slowly and we'll miss out, or they just won't happen at all because lots of this funding will come from international investors and they just won't want to invest in the UK because it'll take so long, and others will be clearing the way to entice international investment and we'll lose out. So it's important that we tackle that.
Reading between the lines, a lot of what you're saying here, from the idea of releasing DSIP from Treasury spending controls to trying to kind of get rid of some of the red tape, is the message that, you know, government isn't working fast enough when it comes to technology. Technology is incredibly fast moving. Government is quite cumbersome and quite slow and quite bureaucratic. We've even seen this in terms of, you know, legislation like the Online Safety Bill. Every time it gets, think it's finished, they have to add something else because some other thing has come along that they haven't thought about. And that's really the problem here, isn't it? That there's a real mismatch between the technology world and how government works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I admittedly had to get a lot off my chest when I wrote this or co-authored this Wired for Success report. Having been in government, and you know, the job of a SPAD in many ways is to help hotwire the system, right? To actually just deliver for ministerial priorities through the bureaucratic machine, and it can be an absolute nightmare sometimes. I mean, you have some amazing people that work in there, but some of the structures are mind-bogglingly overly complex. So yeah, so that it's a challenge within government endlessly anyway, but especially in the science and tech world where things have to move fast. One of the things that we pointed to in Wired for Success was this £900 million supercomputer that's being procured up in Edinburgh. You know, I mean, the pace of compute power that is increasing is happening pretty fast. And currently it's exascale is what we're trying to build, which is currently the fastest type of supercomputing that you can get, which can get you to do all sorts of amazing things. But the challenge is that government's procuring this, but as far as I'm aware currently, and certainly was the case when we were writing this report, that's still going to go through the same business case, bureaucratic processes as everything else. And this is something that, you know, Jeremy Hunt has said is absolutely critical to our sort of future innovative capacity and capabilities, and yet it's still going through the same bureaucratic processes, at least as far as I'm aware currently. And that means that it's going to be well into, I think it's end of 2025 or even 2026. By that point, the world will have moved on, right? You know, the tech world is moving so quickly. It will have built something that is, you know, fit for today, and that will be ready, you know, in 2026. And by that point, it will be pointless and a waste of investment perhaps by that point. So there's huge disconnect between government and the tech world. Is not easily fixed by any means. And I don't mean to suggest that we should blow up the entire system of government and completely start again. But there are lots of things that you need to do in order to cut away the red tape. And as I say, welcomely, both the science department and the Treasury are quite aware of this, and they've been quite constructive. And we've engaged with them off the back of our report that we did, where we advocated some of this business case reform, etc. And they've been working on this. I'm keen to see where they get to, and I hope it is rather bold, because it needs to be. But so far, TBC, but I'm looking forward to seeing what they come out with.
What politicians do seem very good at is kind of bigging up the UK. I think you referenced the fact that they want to make the UK a science and tech powerhouse. We've heard Michelle Donnellan talk about how she wants half of new European unicorns in the UK by 2030. We had Jeremy Hunt during the budget talking about making the UK the next Silicon Valley. Lots of people thinking, actually, do we want to replicate Silicon Valley? Isn't that a bit of an old-fashioned way of speaking? What do you make of all this rhetoric, you know? And is any of it achievable, or should they be focusing on, you know, the nitty-gritty of stuff that you're talking about and getting the pace speeded up rather than worrying about kind of making big claims for the UK?
Yeah, I mean, I will channel my inner George Freeman, who's the former science minister who resigned last year. He would talk about, on one hand, you've got Innovation Nation, the other hand, you've got science and tech superpower, which actually, and when I describe it, it actually makes a bit of sense. The science and tech superpower bit is basically focusing your capabilities on what you're really good at or should be really good at. And that's the stuff where, for a lot of it, it'll be for us, we've got a world-leading AI startup sector. We should really be focusing on helping them. So things like access to compute infrastructure is super important. And that's why I was so supportive of you know, the Chancellor's announcement in the autumn statement last year to increase the 900 million up to 1.5 billion. And, you know, it'd be great to see more on that front as well, because where we have world-leading advantages, same with in areas like quantum engineering biology, which the government has basically been clear that these are, you know, it's got five priority technologies, and certainly AI, quantum and engineering biology are definitely three of them and really should be focusing on them. That's a good thing to do. And these are the ones where we can sort of have an outsized impact internationally because we are focusing on the things that we are good at. That's a sort of science superpower agenda in some ways. The Innovation Nation bit is how we can be much more innovative as an economy as a whole. And it also means not just having the kind of whizzy cutting edge science, but actually being able to turn that into perhaps even world-leading companies. And that's where all the stuff around helping businesses to scale, tackling the pension funds reforms, tackling capital markets. And there's a little bit about that in the budget where they announced they're going to do a consultation into what they call PICES, which is some form of somewhere between private and public market, just to basically help private companies make that journey towards IPO, which is obviously very important for their scaling journey. Whether it works or not, we will see. But certainly the attempt and trying to fix it through initiatives like this is important, because there's been lots of discussions around why the UK capital markets are perhaps not serving UK tech businesses that well. And that's why lots of them are going and listing elsewhere, such as the NASDAQ. But that sort of question is on the sort of innovative economy aspect of it. Both of these are super important. And, you know, they take different levels of focus and implementation reforms in order to tackle both of these. But yeah, in terms of what the science department is trying to do, it should be focusing on both of these areas.
Well, Alan, it's been absolutely fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for joining me. But unfortunately, we've run out of time. We will be back, of course, next week with another episode. But in the meantime, you can keep up to date with all the latest UK tech developments at www.uktech.news. Don't forget to follow UKTN on LinkedIn and X, where you can also get in touch with me at Jane Wakefield with your comments and suggestions about the show. Until next week, goodbye from me. This podcast is brought to you by HSBC Innovation Banking, the power behind the UK's forward thinkers, future makers, and leap takers. They're helping to ignite the bold ideas that reshape our world. Go to www.hsbcinnovationbanking.com/en-gb to find out how innovation needs different.